Does he practice in the shower? Where did they come from? It's awesome. Welcome to the DL Gaming Podcast. This week we're going to be talking about TCG Card Shop Simulator, Frostpunk 2, Burr, and Spell Table. But first, my name is Christian.
I'm Bobby.
I'm Emilio, but I am also settling into regular life. And let me tell you, it is nice. I worked my first 40-hour week, and I had two consecutive days off. I was like, there's another one of these after this one? I was like, what is going on? I can feel my body coming back together, dude. It feels good. And I got some gaming in, which is great because I have a gaming podcast. So it all works out
in a way. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
One feeds the other. It's crazy.
That's great, dude. That's great. What are we pinging this week, Emilio?
We are pinging that cheaters are feeling froggy. If you click the little link, you'll see what happens on a game of Deadlock when a cheater is found out. Two things can happen. You can ban him immediately from, or that person immediately from the server, or you can vote to turn him into a frog. And a defenseless frog. So I don't think they're immune to damage. I just think he's very good at hopping. And so they're just chasing him down, and that's all you can do is run. So I think it's funny, and I don't know if it does any additional, like, oh man, I really don't want to become a frog, so I'm not going to cheat. But I think some people might cheat just to become a frog. Actually, it might have the inverse effect, but at least it's cheeky and it's cute. So
people chasing the frog.
Yeah.
And when we interviewed the guy who made Slapshot, I remember him saying that they muted toxic players, but there was no indication that they were muted. Like they could still
great.
Type. Yeah. And it looked like everyone could see their messages, but really no one could see what they were typing. So I feel like this would be so much better if like everyone saw you as a frog, but you saw yourself as like your normal hero. And just over time, I don't know, people kept referring to you as this frog guy, or you played on a separate match. There's levels to this. They could go.
Now that you said that, I want to go full Inception and put him into a server full of bots and with the same name of all the people that you were just playing with.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they're just playing, you know,
you're a frog on the other one. Yeah. That'd be funny. Cool. Bobby, what are you pinging this week?
This week, California, well, I don't know if it happened this week, but recently California has a new law that will force storefronts to disclose that buyers don't actually own their digital purchased media. I linked to an article that was on IGN, but I also heard about this too. Through other areas. But so this is like kind of in response to all the online purchasing that people are doing, and they want to make it clear. California is very progressive with their legislature, which a lot of people don't like. But in this case, I think this is the right decision here. They want to make it extremely clear that when you buy a game online, you're not actually buying a game, you're buying a license to the game. And, you know, a lot of people have gotten upset when games have been taken off of storefronts or whatever. This is not only going to apply to video games, but TVs and movies as well.
Well, the thing is, it's already in the EULA, right? But I guess they want to make it
the EULA that we all read.
I read every word of the EULA.
Nobody reads any of it, but
you can't click accept until you scroll all the way to the bottom. So of course, read that.
Yes, I've read every word clearly.
Yeah, so they're talking about like the storefront pages. Oh. So like on Steam, it won't say like buy this game. It'll be like, you know, buy a license for this. Kind of buy this game. Yeah. You know what is odd though? Like I've talked about this before. Back maybe 5-10 years ago, like 10 years ago, when Steam was experimenting with more content, TVs, movies, and other stuff. Like I bought some of that and I still have that on Steam. It's like hidden in there. I got to click a bunch of buttons to make it appear, but it's still there. And the video quality is terrible and their player is awful. Like they didn't put much into it and that didn't really take off. But yeah, I've got like a full season of Super Mario Bros. 3, the animated series, and like one of John Leguizamo's one-man shows. Like, I got some really weird stuff on there. Yeah. And they don't even deinterlace the video, or at least, I don't know, last time I tried to play it, it didn't. Anyway, what I thought was funny was GOG's response to this. So on Twitter, they responded to it saying, if only there were a storefront that let you actually purchase your own games. And it got a lot of views and a lot of comments. And they had a follow-up tweet that clarified it even more, because I think some people didn't quite believe them. But they do have offline installers for all their games. And I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think GOG is like the best place to buy a game. It's convenient to have things in Steam, but like when it comes to like the actual quality of the game, especially these old retro games, GOG is the way to go. Because yeah, having that offline installer makes it so easy.
I didn't catch the follow-up, Bobby, but are you telling me basically that if I was a game developer and I pulled my game from Steam, that could be deleted from those users' libraries, but on GOG, they own that forever? Like, I can't access, after someone has purchased a product, I can't like delete it from their downloads.
Well, GOG, you download the offline installer. As long as you have that, even if you don't even have an internet connection, like, you can install that game. So yeah, you have that. Not physical, but you have that digital installer that you can use. And, you know, the game that they mentioned in the article was The Crew, which I'm not familiar with, but I guess that was pulled from, I don't know if it was Steam, but I think another like PlayStation Store or something like that, that just started disappearing from people's libraries. But there's a lot of licensing things in the background where games will disappear. There was one recently that was getting pulled off of Steam, and everyone was like, buy it now before it goes away. I can't remember what it was, though. But I know on Steam, if you get that before it goes away, it'll end up staying in your library. Of course, like, a lot of games are like services now. So, you know, if they shut down the servers or if nobody's playing it, then the game is pretty much dead.
Yeah. If I had Flappy Bird on GOG, you're telling me that could be forever, basically.
That could be forever.
That's $1,000 account right there, dude. That thing is worth so much money. You've heard about these iPhones with Flappy Bird on them being worth a lot of money?
Yes. Yeah. Minted iPhones. Can't understand them. I'm pinging this week that my house, guys, is now Steam Deck compatible. Officially, the Steam Deck has arrived. And I don't know if it's life-changing, but we got it so that we could do couch co-op when the baby is here because, you know, it'll be sleeping. And we don't just want to watch movies all day, but we'll still need to watch this child. And it's nice to do something together so that we can still game. But
do you not know the sex?
Oh, I know the sex. It's a girl.
Oh, okay. Okay.
She's coming into the world. So. Oh, I said it. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We talked about the name and all that. All right. You just said it.
Okay. I slipped up calling my baby an it. Referring to it as an object, not a good look for a new dad, but I'm learning, you know.
I promise you're gonna love it at some point, dude. It might not be day one.
Yeah, it might not be day one. So Steam Deck is exciting. I want to thank False Josiah for sending me something like a Steam Deck Bible, just like how to get other applications on the Steam Deck. What is the best way to like store movies if I want to do that? Can I get TFT on the Steam Deck? Like, can I get, you know, not really jailbreaking the Steam Deck, but maximizing what I can get out of the Steam Deck that isn't just intuitive from starting it, that I need to kind of look up. He sent me links for everything and he was explaining things well. So thank you for that. And then the next thing, I made a Mechabellum video and I released it for Mechabellum's 1.0 release. I finished it at the... I was like, I need to finish this video before this game comes out. I'm going to finish it on the 26th. And I finished it at 3 a.m. on the 26th. So I did my due work, and it's 3 minutes and 46 seconds long, guys. So, you know, I'm not asking that much of you, but if you're interested in auto battlers, RTS titles, or Mechabellum, go check that out on YouTube and let me know what you think.
Or interested in Christian. Like, he's also interesting. So whatever he's interested, you might, you know, like that 50 hours of work twiddled down to like 6 minutes and then edited down to a solid 3.5 minutes. I think it was excellent.
I was, thank you, dude. I was making the script and I was like getting all my footage and I was like, I completely forgot to get any Teamfight Tactics footage. And that was like half of my script. I was like, what am I thinking? So I download League and I'm playing Teamfight Tactics. And I'm having so much fun, and
that's
I'm
what I was gonna say.
Yeah. Yeah. It got me. It got its dirty little slot machine hooks in me. TFT is so fun. But yeah, that's featured in the video. Go check it out. And we're moving on down to highlights. So games that we have been playing, and we have a little bit of a theme this week with tabletop card games. So Bobby, start us off.
So this week I played TCG Card Shop Simulator. This was gifted to me by Emilio. Thank you very much.
No problem.
This is...
That's me.
That's me.
This game is exactly what the title says. It is a TCG Card Shop Simulator. It's a management sim where you own a TCG card shop. You get to name that card shop. Mine is called Card Shop. And... and you know,
why did she do it? Did she do it for the bit, or did you do it because you're you? I can't tell anymore. I can't tell. I bet you the generic name was like Rodolfo's Great Cards. Bobby deletes it all. He doesn't just press enter.
Yeah,
could it
have been it? Enter would have been easier than renaming it Card Shop. You're still right.
Well, it's doing very well, my business, despite the name. Not only do you sell cards, and by cards, I mean you sell packs, you sell individual singles, you sell boxes, but you also sell collectibles too. So the whole boutique. And it's your typical tycoon management type game, but I think what people are really enjoying about this, and they are enjoying it, overwhelmingly positive reviews here on Steam, but I think what they really like is it kind of feeds that card, that TCG addiction. So you can get boxes of cards, and this I think is similar to actually owning one of these shops. You get these boxes of cards and you split them up like, okay, well, I'm going to have these boxes, then I'm going to have a few open packs, and then I'm going to open some of these packs and then see what singles I get, and then I'll put those in a case and sell them for however much. So the opening of packs is always exciting. It's like loot boxes, just left and right. And you can open as many as you want, but then you have no product to sell unless you get really good pulls. So, you know, it's a give take type thing. Plus you have to have the right piece of furniture to sell the singles as well. And you can only show so many or sell so many at a time, depending on how much furniture you have. What you can also do in this card shop is buy tables so people can come in and play on your tables, and, you know, they pay by the hour or whatever. You make a little money that way. But that's a very big part of these card shops as well. Anytime you go into one of these, there's always going to be a bunch of smelly dudes playing whatever over there.
Bobby, I never really thought about it, but this business is, I mean, it's not the make or break part of the business, but a lot of the business is a crapshoot. Like, you open collector's packs hoping for big pulls, just like a regular player would.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of their business is really about that. I mean, from this game, like, I'm not selling a whole lot of those. Most of it is just selling the actual card packs, but I think, like, it's probably the same for a real card shop. But yeah, you can also host events. And I have not gotten to this part in the game yet, but there's an option to host events. So I'm really interested to see what those are like. And you've got to pay your bills too, like any management game. But the other little mechanic that they throw in there, which I thought was funny, was you get these customers coming in and they have a cloud of green haze around them. And at first I was like, what is that? Do they have lots of money or something? Like, is the game telling me like this guy is loaded? Like, but no.
Loaded with bacteria, dude.
Yeah, exactly. They stink. They smell bad. I guess.
This is a real thing, dude. They wouldn't have put it in there. Being a lifelong Magic player. It was probably worse when I started. It's probably better now. But yeah, it's a real thing. I always tell the story. I went to a pro tour event. That's a big tournament. And the Queen Mary, and there was no like central air on a big fucking steel boat. And the sweat from people was dripping off of the pipes from just the condensation in there. It was disgusting. But we played. Goddamn right, we played.
Through the stink and the haze.
Carried on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when we went to DreamHack about 2 years ago, they had DreamHack here in San Diego at the convention center, same place they do Comic-Con. We went there, checked that out. And in the upper level, they had, it was all Magic the Gathering, like people selling stuff at booths, but then tables and tables and tables of sweaty nerds. And as soon as you went up there, as soon as you got to the top of the stairs, you were just hit in the face just with this overpowering smell of body odor. Like you could tell. So yeah, it is a real thing, man. And I'm glad they included it in the game. I wish they had more mechanics like that, because what you have to do when these smelly customers come in, you have to spray them with yes.
With what?
Like air freshener or something. Well, I don't know. It's this can you buy it. Yeah. Okay. It's this, and you can stock these on your shelf and sell them as well, but you got to keep one in the holster, you know, for when you get these smelly patrons coming in, and you just got to spray them down. Cause if you don't, then your other patrons are going to be upset, and they make comments, you know, they'll say things like, "Ooh, these packs are too expensive," or, "Oh my God, it smells in here." So, I mean, you don't want those dissatisfied customers. So you just got to walk up to people and spray them.
Is that okay in real life? If we could zoom out, is that an appropriate? I feel like you should never spray anyone with a scent in real life. Like that's like beyond the lines. A stranger.
Yeah, that's no. You would never do that, dude. In real life, you wouldn't just walk up to someone and spray them.
You smell. Yeah. Okay.
I've sprayed a lot of people with a lot of stuff, but it was always consensual.
Consensual. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the game is in early access. It's very bare bones right now. Like it could use some work. The gameplay loop is real basic at this point. Like you buy stock, you sell it, you level up, which allows you to buy more expensive stock, which allows you to sell it for more, and the cycle continues. So it's pretty repetitive and basic, and outside of just like hosing down your customers, like there's not much else to do besides that. You can hire staff to do like the basic stuff. Like working the cash register is not fun. Like when someone buys something, they'll hand you some cash and you're like, okay, you need $17.63 of change. So $1 click, $1, $5. I'm like, dude, really? You're making me do this? Like I actually have to count out. And like, I got all the coins there. I was like, okay, I'll give them 5, 6 dimes and 3 pennies, or 2 quarters and a dime and a penny. Like you choose, man, it's your adventure. But no, that part is pretty annoying. And I was surprised they made you do it, but you can hire staff to do that. Although I hear they can just like bolt and take off and be a bad employee as well.
I've got a couple questions, Bobby. One is square foot. A thing? Like are you getting bigger and bigger places?
Yeah, so you can buy upgrades that let you expand your shop as well.
Okay. Yeah. And then are there multiple card games? Like do you have to learn more than one set of cards? And what are the other collectibles that you're selling?
It's all for one card game. This is one of my notes on this. They need to expand it a little more. There's one card game, a fictional card game called Tetramon. I was actually pretty impressed by the art on these cards. Like if you look at the cards, they look like real cards. Like they've got pretty good animation and they've got stats on them. There's foil ones. Like it looks like somebody went through and put effort into this, and they had to make a lot of cards because, you know, you can sell these as singles and they all have different values and rarities. They have all that, but no game. Like if they were to make that an actual game, like that you could actually sit down at one of your tables and play it, like that'd be
so
incredible.
So sick.
But they just have the one game right now.
Like two things real quick. They look, with Palworld getting sued, do you think they released this game and they were like, ah, fuck. Like
yeah,
if this blows up.
I don't know if they're on Nintendo's radar, but yeah, these look
pretty similar.
Very close. They are Pokemon inspired for sure. Like,
yeah. You can hear it from us. I don't want anyone to be ruined, okay?
But, yeah. I do got to say, the human models are very impressive, dude. They're like almost like lifelike, or getting close to lifelike.
Yeah, like the faces and the look, but the way that they walk around and the hair, you can tell it looks a little weird. But yeah, I mean, it looks like they... They probably just got a bunch of assets, threw them in there. And I mean, it all works. It works pretty well. It's got like the bare bones of it, but it's just missing a few more things. Like, it's just, like I said, it's just that loop over and over again. So by the time you get a few hours into the game, like, you've seen it all. The only thing I haven't seen at this point is the event. And I'm not sure if that's really going to be like anything incredible, but it's all pretty basic right now. I'd like to see a few more things, some ideas I'll throw out there, competing card shops, events like theft or burglary, which apparently is like not uncommon for these card shops too. I mean, this stuff is valuable that they have. It's, yeah, it's worth a lot of money. I mentioned like maybe actual TCG gameplay, like that would be incredible, but probably a lot of work. And, they do let you collect the cards. Like, you get your little book and you can flip through them and you can kind of collect the whole set. But I don't know if that's related to any sort of achievements or anything else outside of just like some sort of visual thing. But it would be cool if they like tied that into some sort of game mechanic, like collecting sets, and that leveled you up and gave you something else that you could then use. I don't know. That might be cool. But yeah, I mean, it's a solid game. The only other last thing I wanted to mention was the music is obnoxious, and I had to mute that right away. I pulled a little bit of it. There's some on YouTube. I think we got some queued up. It's pretty quirky. Is it playing right now, Christian? Because I can't hear.
Oh, no, it is playing right now, but you can.
You muted yourself.
How about now? Yeah, do now you hear it now? Boopy, boop, bop.
I kind of like it.
Dude,
yeah,
it's chill.
You want to hear? Yeah, but it just repeats over and over and over again. So yeah, you're listening to that.
Call Bobby tomorrow, middle of the workday, and just go boop, boppy, boop, boop.
No, hangs up the phone.
He can't escape, guys.
I got two things on this. One recommendation for the devs is add like trying to find out people trying to sell you fake cards. Like, ooh, you should be able to like go over it with a microscope and like
inspect,
not
yeah,
a microscope, but yeah, yeah, inspect. Then you get a little bit of papers, please, in there, you know, because if you buy a fake, that's
what are they called? They got a name for that when you send your proxies card off.
Oh,
no. Well, I mean, that would be really cool to like be able to have people come in and sell you their personal stock, and then you can resell it. But there's a name for when you send a card off to get analyzed,
graded.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, you're saying that you can't even buy, people don't come in to sell you singles?
No, I don't think you can.
Oh, that's a whole thing. That's a giant, thing. And the other thing is, my game, Bobby, for this week has solved the stinkiness problem. Solved it completely. The way Spell Table solves it is it puts miles of distance between you and these other stinky Magic the Gathering players. So Spell Table is free and has no addition. There's no premium. There's no gems you need to buy. There's nothing. Basically, you go to spelltable.com and you make a Magic the Gathering account that's free, and it's not intrusive or anything. It's just like a regular account, which you want to have anyway, because that gets you into Magic the Gathering. I use my login for Magic the Gathering Arena, so I was already in the system. I'm already one of the numbers, an important one, but still one of the numbers. So you go to Spell Table, and it's very low investment type of program. It's a web. You don't have to download an app or a program. You just use a web-based application, and it's the simplest thing ever. It's like, do you want to use a webcam or a cell phone? And you select, and then you try to set up the best way you can. What this does is you play Magic the Gathering, Magic the Gathering with real cards, and the webcam reads them and puts it into the website. So it's made mostly for Commander, but you can play two player regular Magic if you want. So it does everything so well. I was very impressed by how this works. So Commander is a four player game. So you have a four a grid of four players. I have an ultra wide screen, so I think it makes it a little better for me, but you can set it to zoom in to the active player, so it'll always show the active player's full set of cards that they have out and are playing with. And you can flip in case they're playing backwards, which totally happened twice to me. You can flip their screen and then it looks correct on your screen. You can invite people to your game. You can make your own rooms. You can join other games. Maybe there's more, but the quality of life stuff was great. I mean, it just works and it works well. I would say so one of the most impressive things is you can mouse over any card and through the camera and the program, it just knows what card you're hovering over and it gives you an enhanced view of that, just a bigger, so you can read it completely if you wanted, which is almost better than regular Magic, because a lot of times in regular Magic, you ask people, can I see that card? And they have to hand it over to you and then you have to read it and then you hand it back to them. And then you forget what it does like three turns later. So you ask them again, but now you don't have to ask that stinky person anymore to see their card. I think it was fantastic. Not just that, but like it helps every Magic player almost is into supporting the local game store, the LGS. And this kind of does, you know, because it's still paper Magic. I guess you could use proxies, which, you know, that's a big thing in Magic the Gathering, whether or not you use fakes or whatever. But people seem to be pretty cool. People are putting like what power level their deck is at. And for the most part, everybody was, you know, playing at that power level. I played my first game of Command. This is what it took. This is what it took for me to play my first game of full four player Commander, which I had a really good time. I played several games. I played till 1:30 in the morning. I played with JP Diddy. I played with Nick. I played with Days, just all on the same night. I mean, it was so cool. It was so cool to like, it feels like regular Magic across a folding table. That's
so let me make sure I understand what this is doing. So every player has a webcam pointed at a surface and that's where they put their cards. And then the software visually understands like what each card is. And then like you still between the players, you still have to like say, get on the mic and say, I'm playing this. And then and yes, they react to
extremely
it.
Extremely vocal. Like you said, Magic the Gathering is that, which I didn't realize until you brought it up, but because that's the only card that I've ever played. Yeah. You have to be extremely vocal because it's not tracking much other than what the cards are. Everything else is managed by the players.
So there's actually no, like, the software isn't actually running the game.
No,
like you're playing the game, but it just gives you like that visual aid. It's like augmented reality.
Yeah, but it's putting card shops like Bobby's side business where the people come into play out of business. You know,
no, not Bobby's card shop, just card shop, dude. Just card shop just happens to be owned. Card shop happens to be owned by Bobby.
You know, it's interesting though, because this is exactly what this guy was trying to make with Pixelborn for Lorcana.
Right.
So
originally
he had like the entire game with the cards in it and all the mechanics like in the software and everything. And it was beautiful, but then Disney shut that down. So he's like, okay, I'm going to make a new product. And it's exactly what you described here with Spell Table, but then they shut that down as well, unfortunately.
Yeah. Super stoked by the ease of use. The tools are very nice. Like you can, like I said, zoom in wherever you want. You can mess up the order. You can roll dice on there. The life totals are there. You can keep track of commander damage. It just goes on and on.
Wins,
so
losses?
Can you put, sorry, what? Two questions at once.
Bobby, does it do win? Oh, sorry. Fuck.
No, go ahead, Christian.
Bobby's more important in my life. No, you can. I can't defer Bobby, and then Bobby, you pass it on to Christian.
So my question was, in this software, you can put the visual hit markers on the cards in the software?
No, you carry dice and you put dice on top of the cards, just like, I mean, it really feels like a table.
So you're still using game. This.
Yeah. What I'm saying is there's tools to keep track of certain things within, but you have to click up, click down for those things. There's hotkeys for that kind of stuff too. But it's all player controlled, but visually you can do it in the browser.
Okay. The Lorcana guy, when he was making this version for that, he was excited about tracking people's wins and losses and giving them an MMR that was like self-reported. Is that available in this as well?
Not that I know of, and I haven't seen anything like that. So I don't think so. I mean, I don't want to call it bare bones. I want to say like it is robust, but simple.
Yeah.
You know, you just go in, you point your camera down, and you start playing Magic if you know how to play paper Magic. And that's pretty much it. There's nothing else you need to know. A 80-year-old Magic player could probably get this going. And we almost had one. Days' setup was rough. Like, she was using her phone as a hotspot. She was using her phone as the webcam. And she had nothing to hold her phone above her play area. But she stacked a bunch of boxes, put something to weight it down, and we could see enough to get a game going, and it was so much fun. We had a great time.
That's awesome.
And we played so late that we were playing with somebody from Australia, and that was cool. Like, it was a really good time.
Is that why his screen was upside down and you had to flip it?
That's why her screen was upside down and I had to flip it, yeah. But somebody else's was upside down as
underrated
well.
Underrated joke, by the way. Yeah. Underrated joke.
Oh, Australia. So good.
Down underrated joke, if you will.
Down under. Oh, my God. It doesn't stop. It started with card shop and it hasn't stopped, dude. My last kind of comment or question is, it's bare bones, but is it bare bones? Is the nature of it being bare bones what helps facilitate it feel like a fun time? Like, you know, is it kind of cool that Amanda did have to stack the things and you still have to put the dice on the cards and all that, so it feels real-ish?
Totally. And it is real. I mean, it's everything but the stink, man, basically.
Except your own stink, right?
Yeah, I guess you're not getting the facial expressions, and because there's no webcam, because your webcam is dedicated to facing down, and even if you, I don't know if there's an option to have both, because I haven't seen a face yet, and I played eight games, something like that. I don't know, something like that. So yeah, I don't think most people are using their face, but you see a lot of hands, and you see a lot of like stuff is going on with the hands. My story from this game was that we were playing with two randos. It was Nick and I, and he messaged me, hey, player four, whatever his name was, player four is a real tryhard. And I was like, he seems so nice, like he's like not attacking people, he's trying to be diplomatic in the dealing, in the damage he's dealing out. And Nick messaged me on the side, and I was like, I don't know what you're looking into. And then two turns later, he's like, I kill you. I kill you all, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. And I was like, oh, shit. It all happened, you know? I don't know if his car... Yeah, it would be pushing it to say that he was playing in the levels that we had posted, but whatever. I need to learn. I got to take my lickings. I am playing my Sliver deck. I have 9 total commander decks, but I'm going to play my Sliver deck until I win once, because it hasn't happened yet. It's funny because anytime anybody sees the Sliver deck, they're like, oh, he's playing the Slivers. Holy shit. Oh, my God. And does that even belong in this power level? And then it draws so much attention and you become a target right away that you never win. But I'm going to try.
Two people in the world who don't know what a Sliver deck is, I'm assuming you're not working with wood. What is special about the Slivers?
Slivers are like Voltron. Every sliver has an ability, and gives that ability to all other slivers. So one becomes two, but actually becomes three, and three becomes eight.
Yeah, they have an exponential power growth, yeah. Basically. So whenever anybody sees it, they're just like, big target. Yeah. Everybody get that guy.
get that guy, because if we don't get him right now, he's going to win.
Yeah. He's going to scale and got it.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely. I've been dying to hear this review of Frostpunk, dude.
Well, you're going to have to wait out in the cold for a little bit longer, probably, because I guess before I start, there's a big old caveat on this. I got a free code, and I got it from a coworker, because the company I work for works on this game. So I'm usually not too negative when I give reviews in general. I like to focus on the positive and what I liked about a game, but just so that you know that when you're listening, you're definitely not getting an unbiased look at this game. This is Frostpunk 2, of course. It is a choice-based macro city builder. I loved Frostpunk 1. It felt like the first time a story or a city builder put story first. Like, story was just as important as mechanics, and you were in it, and the decisions you make, it wasn't just numbers on a screen. Like, something between the storytelling and the sound effects and just the ambience was like, shit, dude, yeah, I am chopping off the left arm of all the orphans in my city so that I can put it in the soup so everyone else can survive. That sucks. And, you know, there was screams, and it wasn't just like negative modifiers. I'm going to have to continue playing before I give a better review of this game. I'm not too far into it. I think I'm about 3.5 hours or something around there. I'm playing through the campaign because that's what I come to Frostpunk 2 for. I come for the story. I don't really want an endless mode with this. I want to be told a nice story and have the city logistics be on top of that and kind of facilitating that. But already I'm a little less invested emotionally than I was during Frostpunk 1. And I remember, dude, playing Frostpunk 1, I couldn't put that down. I was like going 9-10 hour sessions to beat this game because the story was so compelling, and you know, the gameplay was fun too. But this, it's not like that, because Frostpunk 2 puts you on a macro level. So it's set 30 years in the future after you as the steward have already gone through the hard part of like binding, you know, tens of people together to form a colony of 100 people and making it through the first long winter and the decisions that you have to make there. Now you're building kind of a society. You're at like the government level. And so instead of individual buildings, you're building districts. And because of that, you don't really see a lot of the faces of the people that you're supposed to be, in my view, interacting with and having some sort of emotional storytelling connection with. And that was a little disappointing to me. And looking through the Steam reviews, I think a lot of people were disappointed by that as well. This game is a lot more complicated than Frostpunk 1. There's a lot more like mechanical layers of like the city building logistic process that you're going through. And usually I think that would be super cool for me to explore and discover. But I think because I was going in with Frostpunk 1 kind of expectations, I'm kind of, there's some sort of hole missing. And I don't know if that'll be filled later, because I unlock like a Senate that represents all these people. And already a couple storytelling people have been showing up on my screen. And, you know, I have to do decisions that affect them. But yeah, right now I'm not super invested into like the main aspect of what I come to the game for, which is a little disappointing. But I do want to beat this game, and I want to make sure I'm not missing anything before I give like a full review. So come to the podcast next week to see. Ed, Bobby, Emilio, do you have any questions?
Dude. So first of all, bigger is not always better, right? So what is that? A murder is a tragedy, and 1,000 people dying is a statistic,
yeah,
something like that. So yeah, when you lose some of the personability between you and the people you're governing, yeah, you're going to care less. And from what you're saying, it sounds like it thinks it's graduated into just all the other city builders, which is, or heading that direction, which is not what made it special in the first place.
Yeah, that's what it kind of feels to me. And there are interesting mechanics going on, but like I can't, like I just literally can't wait until I meet the people. Like I live for those couple story moments that have come up so far, and like the cutscenes. The cutscenes are great. I'm watching all the cutscenes, but like, yeah, it feels like I'm playing the management part of the game just to kind of get to the story part, where the first one was completely opposite, you know, which why I think it resonated with people who weren't used to playing city builders. Like people use Frostpunk as like an entry level into a city builder because the story can be really gripping. So yeah, I mean, that's where it is for me right now. I guess, unfortunately, fortunately, I'm looking forward to playing it, but that first meeting with it had me definitely a bit disappointed. Yeah.
You're chasing the Frostpunk dragon, dude. It's never this bit as good as the first.
Yeah, yeah. And it's making me, you know, think, okay, what other city builders focus on story in the same sort of satisfying way? And maybe this is like, you know, something I can explore and find other games that are going to fill this hole that I'm feeling right now with this game. Because it's kind of a shame. Like, the mechanics that they are introducing do seem fun. Like, okay, I have to manage heat on a macro level. I have to expand these districts. They have adjacency bonuses. There's this exploration screen where I can go along the wasteland. There's a political system that layers on where the different parties in my metropolis are going to vie for control, and I have to like cater to their wants and needs. But I'm just like, Frostpunk one, but better. Like, unfortunately, I'm like just not there with them. So, yeah.
Fantastic. You're now Anno. Like, it already exists.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. But that is.
You know what it kind of reminds me of, dude, is what you're talking about? It's like you're listening to Kamala Harris or Trump talking, and they're talking about these things that affect 320 million people. And then they go, I met a person down in Pennsylvania, and they, you know, that one person, it's like, those are the cutscenes for you, that like, that's what really brings it home for everybody. Yeah. But it takes more than a cutscene, God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's And I don't want to, like, 11-bit is publishing story first games as like kind of their MO. Like, they've got so many banger titles in their lineup that are story first that aren't city builders. That, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this game had support for a while and that it eventually got around to focusing on the story a little bit more. So
welcome to the DLC, the story.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Reviews are at a 71% right now, which must be a little, you know, hard for them to face because Frostpunk 1 was so beloved. But we'll see where they take it, and maybe this is their vision for the game and people just have to get over it, and now it's a logistics game, and you know, I guess that would be fine too. Anything else on Frostpunk 2 before we burn the coal and move on down
onto Radar?
Onto On the Radar. So these are games that have caught our attention but that we have not played, and I don't know, Bobby, you're scaring me here. Are you back on your inventory crack? Are you back on your...
Well, I tried to get out, but they keep pulling me back in. So on my radar this week is God of Weapons. And this was gifted to me by Burn Division, one of our listeners. Thank you very much. So if you gift it, we have to play it. That's the rule, right? But this game looks pretty good here. This game is Backpack Hero meets Survivor-like. Which is, Backpack Hero was the inventory management game I talked about last week. And of course, you know, Vampire Survivor. So it combines those two. And
wow,
according to what I've read through the Steam page, there's actually a lot of interactive, like skill-based gameplay, which you don't see in a lot of the Survivors. Like, it's usually just running around, auto-attacking, whatever. But in this game, it looks like there's a little more to it than that. And then on top of that, you have that whole inventory management side where you have to arrange the items in your inventory to produce powerful effects at the end of the rounds, which apparently are quite quick too, which I do enjoy. I hate when they really, like when you play a round of one of these survivors likes and it's just like, God, I'm going to be here for 30 minutes. Like if I succeed, you know, if you die early, then it's obviously much shorter, but then you don't get any rewards, but they are rather short. But then at the end of them, you get to buy items and then you arrange them in your inventory to make powerful combinations. A lot of people in the comments were comparing it to a game called Brotato, which I've never played. I think Emilio brought that up on the podcast a while ago. But it's a similar like top-down shooter where you're this potato and you get a bunch of different types of weapons that interact with each other and make you like this giant killing machine. So I don't know. I'm excited to check it out. It combines two genres that I am a very big fan of. And it also is surprisingly cheap. Like it's $5.99. So Survivor's Likes are, it's like a trend for these games to be on the cheaper side. Like most expensive, they're going to be like, what, $10? So I guess I'm not surprised that it is on the cheaper side, but at the same time, it's got really good graphics, like better than it needs to be. Most of these games, inventory management and Survivor's Likes, they don't really bother much with the graphics. They just kind of like, you know, whatever serves the purpose. They don't need to be that great. That's not what the game's about. But this one, it's got this this animated style, like computer animated style, not like a cartoonish look to it, but like a 3D animated style that actually looks really good. It way better than it needs to be. So it kind of gives it the appearance of being worth more than $5.99. But excited to check this one out. I think this one, they just had a big update recently. It is not in early access, but they are advertising that they had a big update recently that added a lot more stuff. So
Bobby,
more on that next week.
Now that you've played a couple of these titles and you're excited to play this, a new one, I think I'm looking for your, what's drawing you to this genre? Like, what do you like about it? And as someone who's never played one of these games, you know, what should I expect? Or yeah, I guess what's the main draw for you?
It's the strategy. It's the planning phase, because that's a part of so many games, but it's often just a very small part of games, but it's a part that I really enjoy. And both the inventory management and the survivor like games, I think they take that, an idea and they just focus just on that and build a whole game out of it. And it's really satisfying. So it'll be cool to see these two combined, but, I don't know. I think the inventory management. So I read a review of God of Weapons when I was scrolling through the Steam reviews, and one of them said, I wish I had this queued up because he probably worded it better than I'm going to say it. But basically he was complaining that you spend so much time like playing around in your inventory. And I was like, good, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I said that like a week or two ago. Yeah. That's what I said like a week or two ago. Like I want to spend a ton of time in the inventory, like tweaking things, getting it just right. Because I always go back to Diablo. If you play Diablo or Diablo, then you know that you're building the ultimate killing machine. You're basically building a blender and pushing the button and turning the blender on and watching it kill, like turn a bunch of enemies into red goo is not really the most satisfying part of that. I mean, what's satisfying about it is seeing how effective it is, but you aren't like, ooh, this is like super interactive. Like, I don't know. I play a whirlwind barb, so maybe that's my problem here. I'm just like breathing through my mouth and holding down a mouse button, right? So I don't know. The fun part of Diablo is like getting the gear, slotting the gear, combining it with other gear, getting the enchantment, like collecting all that, putting it together, figuring out what works. And like, oh, if I do the vulnerability, then that works well with like this sort of damage increase. So it's finding those combinations and like finding the synergies and like, that's cool. The actual like taking it out, it's like a 100-meter drag race. It's like you spend the time getting the car like all tuned up to go really fast and getting the parts and building it. And then you go out to race it and you just put your foot on the pedal for 100 meters and that's it. Like, that's not the exciting part. Like the exciting part is like doing the work and seeing the result, but it's not actually like doing that latter half of it. So you know, that's kind of what these games are to me. That's a very long, long, unnecessary explanation.
No, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. A lot of the fun is in the tinkering. I mean, this is why the Magic the Gathering, to bring it back. I mean, you're always fucking with your deck.
Yeah.
Until you, like, you're right there and you're like, oh, this is it. This is it. I'm losing a little less and I'm winning a little more. And I think I got her dialed in.
You know, they need a card game version of one of these where you don't play the card game. You just go and fiddle with the deck. And it just, you hit auto resolve or whatever.
Well, like, I was almost Star thinking, Wars Rebellion. Dude, like an auto battler where you just tinker with your army and then you put it out there. And
that would be super fun. That would get me for sure. It would get me.
And it just auto battles 1,000 games and then gives you the stats and then you go from there.
For sure. Huh. Yeah. That would do it for me.
It's an interesting idea.
Hey, devs out there. I know you're out there.
You got $1 million ideas 10%. On the DLG. Yeah. Send us 10%. Cool. I'm going to talk about Crusader Kings 3 Roads to Power. JBetQuest posted this in the Discord. Thanks for doing that. He also wrote this little message, which is what caught my eye about the game. And he said, this looks interesting. Allows you to play Crusader Kings 3 as a wandering adventurer, plus a lot more content. But that is the main pull. You're now a wandering adventurer. You're a landless individual. And of course, in the medieval ages, there wasn't just barons and dukes and these feudal systems of power. There was like bureaucracy and tax collectors and the church. And so that Crusader Kings 3 is expanding into these other historical parts and letting you play as like a mercenary or, you know, a bureaucrat is kind of exciting. I played Crusader Kings 3 on Xbox Game Pass when it came out because, spoiler alert, it was super expensive when it came out for little old me up in Canada. Both Diablo and Crusader Kings 3, all AAA titles, are a bit pricey. And Game Pass allowed me to play it for $15 a month. But I think now that the price has dropped a bit, it's time for me to buy this on Steam, get some DLC, and get really into it, because this isn't just the first one they've added. They've added so much to this game since it came out, and a lot of it with Paradox is like the paid content is usually the visual stuff. But then whenever they release a paid DLC, they release all the features of that DLC for free. So like,
That's nice.
Yeah, so the one before this, or the ones a couple before this, introduced like a visual throne room that you could walk around and like talk to characters. That was the paid portion. But then the free portion that everyone got was some of the mechanics involved with the intrigue of that throne room. So Crusader Kings 3, still, spoiler alert, a great game. And I could think, you know, this could be the only game I play easily. It's so fun. So thanks, JBetQuest, for bringing that up. And Emilio, what are you radaring this week? What are you radaring? What's detected on your radar?
First of all, I want to say let's belay that purchase until after Mara is here amongst us, because I feel like some of your priorities are going to shift. Might not be true, but you know, you want, let's put our toe in the water before we make any purchases. I should have, right off of God of War, God of Weapons, I should have went right into Spell Brigade. Bobby, it's what you particularly have been asking for. So we have our first co-op Vampire Survivors-like. And it doesn't look like a pile. It looks like people, they actually try to make a good game, and it's looking good. So it has 86%. Is that right? My eyes are going. It's the first to go, guys. The eyes are going. 86% with 600 reviews. It's going for $10 right now. I really like the art. I like the graphics. The enemies are kind of like these bubbly insects, and they have a good look to them. They move slower than most of the mobs I've seen in most of these games, but I like that because it seems like this unending horde of bad guys that you and your co-op partners have to figure out together. Friendly fire is on.
Oh,
which is
shit.
Crazy because, you know, a lot of times these games make you you know, you're trying to break the game and go nuclear before the enemies become overwhelming. It's a constant race. It's an arms race. But now you have to also consider that you have a teammate that you're not trying to destroy as well. So if you go nuclear, you might also be killing your friend. Not just that, but there's heals, AOE heals. And so you have to be in close proximity for those. So there's going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of proximity and movement and placement strategies, ins and outs and back and forth. But you always have this wave of unstoppable, never-ending bugs chasing you. So I find all of those mechanics very interesting. I'm digging everything they're putting down so far. The game, I noticed people streaming this, and the game still pauses when you level up so that you can make your decision. I don't know what happened. Oh, you level up at the same time. So I guess both people make their selection at the same, you know, and then when the last person has made their selection, then the game resumes. So that's a good way of doing it. It's 1-4 player co-op. I can only imagine that, like, with four players, it gets so chaotic. You're pretty zoomed out. You're very small. So it gives you some room on your, you know, to be able to navigate around each other without hurting each other. But yeah, I like everything that they're doing here. I don't know.
We've got to play this. The only thing is we got to set a date to play this. That's the only thing. That's
great. Did you ever play any more DRG?
Yeah, I've played plenty of TRG. That's the gift that keeps on giving. That game's really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, so imagine that with friends. I mean, it's probably not going to be as good because, you know, I mean, that game really fucking nailed this genre. But, I mean, yeah, working together and talking through it and stuff. Recently, Sam and I played Binding of Isaac together for the first time in a very long time. And co-op is now a thing, like full co-op, not just one person's the main player and the other person is the assistant like it used to be. Now it's two full-on players. And probably 4 minutes into it, I was like, hey, we're going to have to start talking about things. Because, like, you just can't go at it and just play. You can't both just have your own idea of what's going to happen. Like, there needs to be cohesion. And so this 100% is like an Overcooked with aliens attacking you. You know, I feel like. So anyway, I hope they pull this off because it is exciting. I'm also glad that a bunch of people weren't just like, hey, let's take this popular thing and also add multiplayer and just let it go. It does seem like they're trying very hard to have its own mechanics within the idea. And it's not just floating off of one good idea. So, yeah.
They got me, dude. I definitely want to pick this up and play with you guys for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Also, I have Slackers, Carts of Glory, which has nothing to do with anything we've talked about tonight. This is shopping carts going down a hill. And it has kind of like Team Fortress 2 graphics. It's a time trials type game. You're trying to get better and better scores. But there's no steering wheel on a shopping cart nor brakes. So I saw a streamer playing this for a few minutes and he was saying that it feels perfect for what it is. All you can really do is nudge it in the direction that it's facing. So if it happens to be facing right or left, you can kind of coax it to go that direction. And you're trying not to hit things, obviously, and also trying to get the best score. And that includes some, you know, kind of Mario Kart type shortcuts. So I don't know. I really dug the humor here. There's a stamina meter for your nudging. You got to keep that fed with all the beer. But don't worry, the finish line is the convenience store, which there's more beer there. It's multiplayer, which is the saving grace here. Like, if it was just that, it wouldn't be enough. but it does have the multiplayer in there. I think up to four players. It's 25% off now for $9.74. Yeah, I think the graphics are great and perfect for it. The sound effects are great. It seems hilarious. I want to play. I'm probably going to pick this up tonight.
This looks fun. Since you guys, you Americans in sunny San Diego don't have snow, I guess you don't have the experience of like getting on a toboggan or a tube with all your friends and going down a hill really fast. And then like someone gets a permanent injury, like someone's arm gets broken or like someone right. gets stabbed in the eye with like a fence post or whatever. And cause you're going so fast. But I imagine maybe you guys do this stuff when you go downhill, like you get a shopping cart or I don't like you build some sort of car that goes down something, a dirt hill.
There must be some exhilarating what, task.
What fills this hole in your guys' childhood?
Methamphetamine, like, generally. For most okay. of California, it's methamphetamine. That's the okay. middle of California. Right. Southern California is surfing, and Northern California is tech startups. That's where you get your exhilaration.
As a kid, you didn't like go up the biggest hill. Would you just roll down the hill? I feel like...
What did we do, Bobby?
Well, we're right next to the ocean. There's plenty of dangerous fun to be had there.
Yeah, it's mostly the ocean, I guess.
You guys didn't... So no hills? Hills, no interest? You didn't go up a hill, go down
hills
as fast
hills made
as
of
you
water,
can?
Dude. Liquid hills.
Okay, liquid hills. Okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what cool. it is. Yeah.
Guys, we're moving on to the game where you make money guessing a video game sound. There is $70 in the pot. That is so much money. That's what, seven Slacker's Carts of Glories? You know, what could you do with $70? Just think about that. That's unlimited potential. This is the sound you've been guessing for many weeks. You email pixelshitshow@gmail.com to guess, and patrons guess get two guesses. This week, we got a guess from Tom Killer B, who says, that sound is obviously, I put that before, his guess, straight to the point, he says, Slave Zero Blasting Enemies 1999. What do you guys think about that?
I think Shrug. This was laser Shrug. Sound effect A from videogamesoundeffects.com.
Right.
And yeah.
Okay. Okay. See, I think I learned with my first couple sound effects that I didn't want this sound to be in any online library because I didn't want it to be easily searchable. So I did some nifty things to get this so that I wouldn't be guessed. And Tom Killer B, unfortunately,
that is correct, shorty.
Not correct. You didn't get it, which means next week, $75 in the pot. Thank you for your guests, though. And every week, Bobby, Emilio, and Nick have an opportunity to help you by unlocking some hints. And they've unlocked mech, 90s, anime. And those should be pretty useful. I mean, I think we're warm. We're getting warm. We're in the neighborhood. There's only so many games in the 90s. You guys could guess every one and get the money, right? I mean, just by process of elimination. So
good luck this week because I am drunk.
This one's a stupid one. In Frostpunk 2, your city is called New London. Your people are called New Londoners. And I'm just going to ask you guys, there's a number between 1 and 20 for how many real-life cities are in the world named New London. And I'm just wondering if you guys can get that number. You can each guess different numbers.
For how many cities are... What?
Named New London.
New London in the United States.
In the world. Yep.
I said that because I was thinking of how many are in the United States, and I want to go with zero, but I don't know that for a fact.
You guys fought that war. You would think all the New Londons would be scrubbed and called like New New Yorks or something. Well, even New York is from, you can't escape your colonial past.
Yeah. And Canada is such sucking at the monarchy tit so much that I feel like they would have 8 or 9 New Londons. So, yeah. Bobby, I'm thinking lower.
I'm thinking lower than 10.
So am I. So I'm going to go with 4.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 4. It might be obnoxious.
I'm going to go with 7.
7. Those are both really close guesses if they weren't close at all. The real number is 17, and 16 of the new Londons are in the USA, and 1 is in Canada.
Wow.
I've gone
my whole life never being, well, they must all suck because I've never been to
I haven't been there, so they're really missing out.
There's no Disneyland at New London, dude.
Yeah. I think they're probably pretty small places, but you guys are technically surrounded by places called New London. They have infiltrated whatever you guys got going down there. The Federation. No hint this week for you guys. Pixelshitshow@gmail.com to guess that sound in the pot. And I'll hear from you next week. Bobby, listener questions. What do we got?
Well, we've got 4 listener questions from 2 people. Start with Warconius. What's something about PC gaming in the past you found super frustrating? For me, the worst was Micropose flight sim games that had huge book manuals. Copy Protection asked, what is the second word on the 15th line of page 221? That's odd. I don't know. There were so many things that were annoying about old games. And as much as I like old games, like, there's things I never want to go back to. I think the glaring problem was the save systems in old games. They were manual save systems, which pose a bunch of problems. Number one, you forget to save and you lose a whole bunch of progress. Or number two, you save and then immediately die a split second later. So you immediately get caught in this infinite death loop. So a lot of problems with that. But I don't know. I think they made a lot of progress in the save system.
If I was going to piggyback on that, things used to not work as much as they just work now. Like, just not work. You know, there was a lot of, do I have the right driver? Do I have the right graphics card? Some graphics cards just would not run certain things. Is this thing compatible with my system? Just on and on and on. Not every time, but within, you know, 10 games, 2 of those would have serious problems, especially early on. And you just had to, like, work your way through it, through forums and talking and beating your head against the wall.
It also wasn't as easy to patch games back then, too.
Yeah.
Which was very confusing. Patches were a big deal. Yeah, and you had to, if you played multiplayer, everybody had to be on the same patch. So you'd try to join a game, it wouldn't work, and you didn't know why. And then you'd realize, oh, they're playing on a different version of the game than me, so you'd have to go find that, download it, install it.
IP connecting to other people, that always sucked, because if you were off by 1 decimal, you were not on the right server. And you know, as I do like to podcast, I like to drink and play, and so once you start drinking, you're not very good at numbers or letters or typing. So that all led to not connecting.
Yeah, just multiplayer in general was a lot more difficult back then.
Yep.
All right. Next question from Warconius. What's something you miss about PC gaming in the past? And do you consider yourself a retro gamer?
I do not. Definitely. I always think newer is better. I mean, it's not always true, absolutely. But yeah, I think we're moving in the right direction generally. Bobby probably would say, I don't know. Yeah, not as future forward as I am, I guess. I do miss. I miss. It's not so much about PC gaming, but outside of that, it's like how much my peers, not just me. I know I always complain about time, but everyone, how little time you have now. So if you're like somewhere between 18 and 25 or something, or 30, and you have tons of time to play with your friends that you've long time play group, like, enjoy it, because there's a pretty good chance that all those people will not have that time to do that anymore pretty soon or at some point in your life. So that's what I miss, everybody having time.
What do you miss, Bobby?
Well, I feel like I've talked about this before, but I feel like back in the day when people made video games, their goal was to make a really good video game because that's what would sell a whole bunch of copies and make them a lot of money. And now development has kind of shifted a little bit towards let's just make a money-making machine that has really addictive mechanics and we'll call it a video game. So
no, kids, Bobby, it's
so
better.
Kids buy it. So I don't know. I feel like games have gotten a lot more predatory and I don't know if they were like totally like that back in the day, although I don't, there's probably examples to the contrary, but yeah. But then again, you go back and you play some of these old games and you're just like, well, that was fun for like 20 minutes and then I'm bored. So
yeah.
What about you, Christian?
I think what I miss is the physical manuals that came with a lot of old games. I think, you know, you can get that tutorial in a YouTube video or you can Google search and maybe there's like an online Wikipedia or fandom that has like all the information you need and that's fine. But like there's something about having the physical material in front of you and being able to flip through and reference it without interfacing with technology. And then I think on the other point, what I miss is maybe more of my childhood, but when I played PC games, even though we were sitting down at a monitor, usually I was playing with someone else. And I can't remember, or I can remember the last LAN party I went to where I brought my PC. It was like 6 years ago, we had a Civ party, you know? And why have a LAN party when we can all connect digitally to each other and play a game? But there's something so special about being in person. And I just wish, yeah, I don't know. I think I miss having neighbors that would come over and join me in playing instead of always having to connect digitally with modern gaming.
If you got that booklet, you'd also have the asking, what is the second word on the 15th line of page 221, dude?
I'd happily open it and highlight it so I can always refer back to it easily.
All right. The last one from Orconius is a long one. Death Stranding 2 is confirmed for 2025, and Kojima said this about the game. Development isn't done yet, but I feel confident, and it's turning out to be an even weirder game than the first one. We're making it with a sense of, is there really a game like this out there? So Warconius asks, can you think of a weirder, non-obscure game in the indie space? For me, it would be Pony Island and Superhot.
First of all, I think we just got Trojan Horsed. Like, he just wanted to talk about Death Stranding, and then he kind of like pony, like question, he just it? Added a little tiny question, like a three-word question at the very end, just so he could get his Death Stranding announcement in. But he deserves it, especially after October 1st. That's a very, like, you didn't see anything. That's a foreshadowing for the people that know will know. October 1st is going to change.
Cryptic.
Yeah, it's all going to change things. Anyway, for me, Inscription was so strange. So strange, man. Just like, you're trapped in this cabin with this person that wants to play this obscure card game with you that apparently they created, and they're wearing the same person's wearing a different mask, and every mask they wear is a different boss. And then while they're gone, you can try to like sneak out of the cabin, but everything in there is, holy shit, man, that thing was heavy.
Yeah, and Inscription is made from the, or by the same developer as Pony Island, so that's kind of a theme there, of those games.
Yeah.
And dude, did you play Inscription and then it became like a Pokemon game? And you're like, what the fuck is happening with this game now? And then in
I
the
didn't
last
get that
act,
far.
Yeah.
I haven't got out of the cabin.
That's when I got out of the cabin, it turned into a Pokemon game. I was like, okay, dude, I think I'm done. Because then I looked up like, okay, how long is this game and how many of these stages are there? And then there's another game after the Pokemon like game that is a new installment in the final thing of what the game is really about. And I was like, You can only mind fuck me. Stop. I do not consent to Pokemon when I bought this card game. Okay.
Bobby, did you finish it?
No, I got close, or at least I think I got close to finishing it. And I kind of wish that I would have, but yeah, it was, the game was pretty involved. It was a good game, but it kind of took a lot out of you to get through it.
The other ones are very like like mount your friends is extremely strange. We're just like mounting more and more muscular men to try to achieve a certain height. That one's super strange. And what is the one with the penises and you're trying to chase each other's buttholes? What is that one called? Genital jousting. That is one of the strangest fucking games ever, but also hilarious until you throw up. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I think a lot of the games that were mentioned here, Pony Island, Super Hot, and I think Inscription possibly also, they've all got that theme of like breaking the fourth wall. Like the game acknowledges that you're playing a game. And I remember seeing that in Hotline Miami, the end of Hotline Miami. That was part of the ending, and I thought that was really weird, but that was before a lot of games started doing that.
But I haven't talked to one person who's played Don't Kill the Princess or whatever that's called, and I want to, I don't know, more than I want to play it, I want to talk to somebody that's played it, because those reviews on that game were crazy. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you guys remember
that game? Sounds familiar, but no.
Yeah.
Is it called Don't Kill the Princess? I can't find it on Steam. It's either
Don't Kill the Princess or
Slay the Princess.
Slay the Princess.
That's the one. Okay. Yeah.
Where she's pleading with you over and over why you should not kill her, but the game is telling you over and over that you should kill her. And there's various stages of this. Isn't it overwhelmingly positive with tons of reviews?
97% with 14,000 reviews.
Yeah.
People love this game. This is worth trying. Yeah.
I don't know any of those 14,000 people. And I don't particularly want to play it because it seems like a lot of reading, but I want one of you guys to play it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question is from Burn Division. What is the PC or gaming peripheral that you've had the longest or that you assume that you've had the longest? I've had the same mouse pad for almost 11 years now. It's not in perfect shape, but I do wash it regularly, but it has held up surprisingly well all these years. If you want to see a picture of that mouse pad, you can go on over to our Discord at dlgaming.net and check it out. I too use a mouse pad that I should probably get rid of and replace. What I've done is bought the same mouse pad, like a couple of them, and then when they just get gross, I just toss them and use another one. Maybe I should be washing mine. But I don't know. My keyboard I've had for a long time and I really like it. Needs new keycaps, but I really haven't had it that long. It's been like 5 years maybe, which I don't think is like that crazy for a keyboard.
Bobby, I have my bloody keyboard. Go ahead.
I just want to know Bobby. If Bobby has a bunch of shirts and pants. Like, does this philosophy backups. Where he buys a bunch of mouse pads and they're just like hanging on his wall pristine and he just mounts one off and puts it like, does anything else in your life follow this same pattern?
No, I really don't stock up on stuff in general, but with the mouse pads.
I got a whole stack of them.
Well, you know, I got like, I mean, I think I actually am out of them after this one, but, and I probably could use a new one, but I don't even know if they make them anymore. They're small mouse pads. I know the trend is now to have that big one that goes underneath the keyboard, but my desk isn't very big. I got a lot of stuff on it, so it wouldn't really fit. So I like the small mouse pad.
Yeah. The large ones are the way to go, man. It makes everything softer, it makes a hard surface soft. Anyway, for me, it's my keyboard. Bobby, do you know how long ago we did that partnership with Bloody Keyboards? It must have been over 6 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. It was probably 2017.
Yeah, I had that keyboard for a good amount of years, 6 years probably, before I replaced it. It was a Light Strike keyboard, I remember, so it didn't have any mechanical problem parts. You push the button and the button interrupts the laser, and then that would that's the signal for the for it being struck. And so there's nothing really to break. And the only reason I upgraded to this Logitech one is because it has a volume control on the keyboard itself, which is the most convenient place for volume control. I love it. It makes all the difference.
Sweet.
All right. Well, that is it for listener questions.
Let's close the show out on just like really lackluster energy. I think we should bring it down.
It's late. But what's everyone playing this week? You know, I'm playing God of Weapons, but what are you guys playing?
Frostpunk 2, baby. Got to get to the end of this story and make sure I'm not missing out on anything because I owe it to 11-bit from Frostpunk 1 to like play through this game as they intended and see what's there, I think.
Well, tonight I'm going to flesh out DLChunkCon 6 so that we can talk about it further when we plug it. November 1 through 3rd, 1st through 3rd. Is when it's going to be, but we're going to talk a little bit more about narrowing down exactly what we're going to be doing or what's going to be going on for those 3 days. So there's that, and then besides, as far as playing video games, I mean, I'm such a sucker for Magic, man. I want to play more Spell Table, but you know, games are like 30 minutes to like 2 hours, so there's only time enough for a few of those. Anyway, until next week, we got, speaking for Bobby, Emilio, no, I'm Emilio, Bobby, Christian, Bobby, Christian, myself, confused titties, everyone, they're pointing every which direction. Nobody could get a handle on these things.